trucking on. And I'm trucking on. Move her on down the line, another town will do me fine. I'm trucking on. I'm trucking on.
Howdy, friends, and welcome to Trucking On. I'm your host, Ward Richmond. I really appreciate you tuning in today, and I hope you enjoy the show. Matthew Lopez.
Hey, buddy.
Welcome to Trucking On.
Let's go.
This is great to have you on the podcast. Your name came up in conversation a couple of weeks ago with another one of my podcast guests. I forgot how, and maybe I was talking about doing the Ironman.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how we met.
Yeah,
we did Ironman Canada together.
Yeah.
2011.
And you were doing big man Ironman then. You're leaning mean now, but man, you were showing me how to grit it out and no excuses. That was amazing to watch.
I was a big boy doing that. And we were like in Canada doing mountain climbs on the bike. It was brutal.
And do you remember, I don't know if you remember this, but you and I think talked about, we're like, we knew we were going to do an Ironman. I'll just speak for myself. I chose that race because I was not a small guy. Like I was like, for an Ironman guy, I was a big guy, 205. And so I was like, I do not want to be trying to do this in like a Texas heat. I'm like scouring the Ironman locations. I'm like, oh, which was in Penticton, Canada at the time. And it, historically, the average, I looked it up, I researched before I signed up, and that the average was 70 degrees on race day. And I'm dude, that's for the high.
In August.
Oh, in August, like it's going to be perfect. And our race day was 96.
It was hot.
Yeah, so it backfired.
I went back and did it in 2012.
I remember that.
And I got injured.
You were injured right before and you literally couldn't run for the last
I couldn't run the marathon.
Yeah, yeah.
I had to walk walk basically the whole marathon and I barely finished and made the cutoff time. So I had to go back and then I did Ironman Texas and then I retired from the sport.
Yeah.
But I did meet you during that with John Myers. We were part of that, the three man crew from Dallas and we all trained together and did the camps and so fun.
It was so fun. It was a sweet season of life.
That the triathlon world, that was just like this one of the many lives we've probably both lived within this one life that I have such fond memories of and the bonding you get over doing those just going through hell and back basically intentionally to just push your body to the limits is great way to bond.
Yeah, we formed a pretty unmistakable and enduring bond during that time. That's one of the beauties of doing things like that. Because when I see your name on my text messages or phone calls, it's like, that's my guy. I'm going to call him back.
Always.
Get on his podcast.
I know. We were going to have breakfast. And then I said, why don't we just do the podcast? You're like, no, let's just have breakfast. Then you woke up this morning like sick. Let's do the podcast.
Well, it's funny. It's like, I language this and like when I pray about it going to bed because I want to spend great time with you, it's just like I feel like God was telling me, hey, let's record it so everyone can benefit from our update. And I know you've got a great thing going, so we'll breathe some life into that too, and then hopefully bless a lot of people with what we talk about and catch up on life with my friend.
Undoubtedly. So I ask all my guests the same 15 questions.
All right.
So I'm going to start with letting you tell me about what happened ages 12 to 22 in your life. I look at those as just really important years.
Yeah.
And feel free to skirt on the earlier side if you feel like something really important happened that you want to address. But tell me what happened.
Yeah. So 12 to 22 is, a very important era of my life because, when I was 11 years old, my parents got divorced. So literally my mom left my dad on my, 11th birthday.
Wow.
And the reason is because, and you know, my dad.
Yes.
And I just want to be clear. I love my dad. You've met my dad, probably love my dad.
Yeah. Great guy.
Yeah. I talked to him this morning on the way up here. He said to tell you what's up.
So. Was he Waylon Jennings roadie or something?
Yes. And you have a Waylon tattoo. So I love Waylon. And so We had an instant connection, and he came to Ironman Canada, saw your tattoo, and just is a huge fan.
What's
of yours,
his name?
So Lambert Lopez.
Lambert.
Yeah. So he's, but anyway, my dad's a really special guy. He's now given his life to the Lord. And I've just seen like such a change in him the last decade. And so one of the best things that I'm ever gifted with is being his son. And then knowing like what I believe is that I will be able to hug my dad in heaven one day, which will redeem everything that I'm about to tell you. But my dad knows this. I've shared this, you know, in front of other people with him, you know, there to listen, which is really hard to do, but I asked for his permission because it's my story, right? It's just what happened. And it's a product of if you have a dad or a mom or anyone in your family that's not living with wisdom. And there's a lot of hurt and pain and consequences that come with that. And so my dad was not walking with the Lord at the time. And he was, you know, I just grew up in an abusive, violent household. And so he was both of those things to me and my mother. And at one point, I tried to intervene. And it was the night of my 11th birthday party. But my birthday was on the next day, a Monday. And so I went to school that day, and my mom, because of my attempted intervention, you know, to stop what was going on in my house, which was physical violence and abuse. And I, for the first time, like, you know, was going to try to, couldn't do anything. I was 11 years old, but I was going to try to do something to stop my dad. And she saw it in my eyes. And so she chose at that moment to leave. And then that culminated in a divorce. And so 11 years old, moving to those formative years of being 12 years old. To be honest with you, my brain still was a little too young to process all that and trauma. And I decided, I think it wasn't like a formal decision in my head, but what I did is like, I was like, I'm going to hold this all together and just basically, for lack of a better term, be the golden boy. So I'm going to be the performance guy. Like, I'm just going to be the best student. I'm going to kill all the tests. I'm going to be the best athlete. I'm going to just achieve, and seek the affirmations of men and my parents. And like, just like, hey, well, y'all might have screwed this up, but like, I'm going to get it right. And I, during that time, and you know, just one other thing without going on a detour, but I was, you know, had my parents hired a male babysitter when I was growing up, and I was sexually abused by him during that time. And I know I'm just saying that almost like glazing over it. It is a big deal, was a big deal, but you know, the way that I've been able to process that and forgive him was just because of the finished work of the cross and Jesus Christ, which meaning Jesus died for that man's sins too, and they weren't mine to bury. So all of that trauma in my life, I don't have to bear any sense of justice or vengeance, which I did for a long time. So that's what I'm going to describe in that 12 to 22 and beyond, because of everything that was going on and my performance-based mentality. Like I'm just going to work out my way out of all this guilt and shame and kind of like prove the world wrong. I spent a lot of time doing all those good things and living almost a double life, because in my heart, I had a murderous heart. Like, I wanted to go after that guy. I was still mad at my dad, you know? Like, my home life fell apart. My world was different than all my friends, you know? Like, having to two birthday or whatever it was, you know? It's like, some ways, it's so odd to say, my childhood was just ultimately a confusion bomb, because there was a lot of good. And there was a lot of, you know, love and sacrifice from my parents that I knew existed, but yet a lot of suffering too, and a lot of division and things that weren't loving. And so, you know, where that manifested in my life was a lot of physical violence. It's just what I saw and what I knew. And I had, just as a kid growing up, a background in boxing and taekwondo, and always, you know, just doing what I think a lot of boys do. But when around the time I was 14, like, I had my first fight with an adult, you know, like a man. And, you know, I kind of hit puberty early. And
where did you grow up?
In Arlington.
Okay,
in Arlington,
cool.
Yeah.
So how, you were 14 and you got in a fight with an adult man?
Yeah.
How did that go down?
It was after a soccer game. Yeah, it's crazy. So
I mean, you're just, were you just at the soccer field or?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He said something or mouthed off?
So there were, it's so odd because you hear about these things now in society where it's like, you know, the dad goes off at the softball game and you read about it in the news and you can't believe that, but I'm just telling you, like, it was a different time. And those things happened a lot back then. And we didn't have the same news cycle and
right.
You didn't have the same ramifications. Media. So it's like, I know what I'm saying sounds crazy. I'm just trying to give the perspective that it like you were talking about your growing up earlier. It's just some wild things happened that should not ever be, but they were just a little more commonplace is point number one. But yeah, it was just a soccer game. And like I was describing, I was talented to some degree, athlete. And then I was big. And so like, you know, I was the target of most of the aggression from the other team. Right. And, you know, a big soccer player, but a 6 foot, I was 6 foot two and, probably 185 pounds. But I think I hit that when I was 15.
Yeah.
You know, and so like you put me on a soccer field and it's like, so there were people that were just sent to take me out, you know, like to hurt me or whatever. And so it was one of those type of games. And so this guy's son was just going out. I still remember his name. But he was just going after me the whole time. And he ultimately got a red card for just fouling me so much, you know. And then when he got the red card, he hit me in the back of the head when he was like getting kicked off the field and like all this crazy stuff, right?
Insane.
Yeah. And so like afterwards, after the game was completely over, I went, you know, our bleachers were actually on the same side of the field. And then like my bag was kind of in between the two bleachers. So when I walked over there to get my bag and my cleats and all that stuff, change clothes, he was like right there. And the son okay. was right there. And so I kind of said something to him, like, whatever. But it was something to the extent of
nice
like,
job getting kicked yeah, out of the like, game, yeah, bro.
Like and we won, you know, yeah. Something like that, you know. And his dad jumped down off of the bleachers. And the reason why I'm saying that is not like a machismo way, but like I had been in that situation so many times with kids. That like I knew that like if someone's in your space, you have two choices. You can either try to really run and get out of there, or you can risk being out on your back. Because most people, when they're in that close to your face, at least, you know, people that know what they're doing, like they're not there to talk anymore. They're gonna hit you. And yeah. So I didn't want to wake up on my back. And so I just hit first and it didn't go well for anybody on the other side of that, you know? And so, and it just erupted into this stupid brawl. And like, there was all this stuff with the soccer, you know, league and stuff. Like people had to come to a hearing like later on. I mean, they took it very, very seriously, but yeah, that was actually a really bad thing for me because then at that point, like by the time I was 15, I think I'd, you know, fought several adults because it was just my way of like letting that hate in my heart come out. And
you would typically win.
That was probably the worst part. Yeah. That's not saying much. And certainly back then, like now percentage wise, like you're likely to run into like a guy that has, you know, jiu-jitsu background or UFC background, but back then you weren't.
I don't feel like if you're training that way that you would go after a
exactly.
Kid,
well, exactly. Well, yeah. That's the other thing. But certainly I can say this, you know, just because I've lived it, is there's probably of the guys that will fight you, meaning like that are, you know, I saw some stupid survey on the like internet that was like 35% of the US males think that they have a chance against a grizzly bear in a fight. And it's like, I took that. It is a crazy statement. I don't know how much science there is to that survey. But it just
I'm not in that 35%.
And if you know what you're doing. But the point there was is that that's how the average guy thinks that they'll perform in a fight. That same logic that makes you think you have a chance against a grizzly bear is like, man, I just see red bodies hit the floor. I mean, that's me, bro. You don't want to mess with me. And it's like, no, that's not you.
Yeah.
If you run into someone that's trained and know what they're doing. It's like a cat playing with a mouse. Like, you're going to see red and a body's going to hit the floor, but it's going to be you.
Yeah.
And so that was probably the worst thing, is like, I, you know, was not living right, not dealing with the hate and the unforgiveness in my heart. And then you can bump into a lot of angry, hurting people, and then you figure out you're good at fighting, and then it just leads to this like destructive path of violence and chaos and destruction in your whole life. So that was my 12 to 35, 12 years old to 35, yeah, like kind of expanding that time frame a little bit, but overlay with this like...
while high performing and all other
exactly.
things.
Yeah, so yeah. It's like you... In fact, I was with a friend earlier this week that was giving me his perspective of my life. We've known each other since we were 14, and I was listening to him, and I'm like, all this is evidence of, number one, God's grace, and two, like how good I was at hiding that like bad, violent side.
Yeah.
And it was just the inappropriate way that I dealt with all the anger and hurt and frustration in my life, and evidence of not trusting God. Because essentially what I said is like, if there is a God, meaning my 12-year-old self, if there is a God, then he wouldn't have let all these awful things happen and my world wouldn't look like this. And so I'm just going to do this under my own might and my own power. And what I felt like I was doing, even with the physical side, was it's not like I was like, would picture myself as some meathead bully or like some guy where you just be like, man, that guy's a jerk. But I would be the guy that would like stand up against, I'm using air quotes here, evil.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, if there was that jerk at the party that goes and beats everyone up and takes the girl's beer out of her hand and knocks her down,
you're gonna take him down.
Then that,
you're
like, that's my guy.
The good ass kicker.
Yes. And that's, again, that's just a huge problem. That's not who my God calls us to be. And it caused a lot of pain and hurt in my life, and jail and broken bones and stitches and surgeries and just not a lot of not fun stuff until I came to my senses.
You know, I remember you, your testimony that time when you invited me to, when you shared this story years ago.
Yeah.
And found God, I think, really simultaneously at that stage. We were probably at that age, and I had recently quit drinking. I lived a very similar life to yours in terms of how I dealt with my trauma, not the same types of trauma, different, but trauma nonetheless. But I did not become a fighter. I became very self-destructive. So I would be a super high performer, but then chain smoke cigarettes, drugs and alcohol, like to the extreme, and partied extremely hard. And I mean, I was like that when we met and we were doing Ironmans, you know?
Well, and I don't know if you knew that, but I was too.
Yeah.
You know?
I tell people all the time, people that do Ironmans, there's a lot of recovering addicts and a lot of active addicts, and it's an addictive sport. It is
also an escapist sport. Cause I remember like when you're going on those 8-hour bike rides, it's like, you're just, all you are is your next breath and your next pain, and you can figure it about everything else.
You're chasing endorphins. You're running away from your dealing with your trauma. I just did a podcast on what I call the addict energy field. And it's about how all of these things we're talking about are all the same energy. Now you can use it for, quote, good things or bad things, but it's still not you're not living in balance. You're doing these extreme things. And man, I mean, I just got chills with you telling that. I've heard that, you know, basically that story many years ago. And, but I was doing the same thing. I just wasn't fighting people. I never got in fights. I think I was in one fight because somebody like forced me to fight them in the football locker room. Cause I would fuck with people, but like I used my words.
Wit and words.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And like in my marriage, I told my dad, you know, he would get really his feelings hurt that my ex-wife would yell at me in front of them sometimes. And I had to explain to him, like, Dad, you don't understand. She yells at me, but it's because I have laser beams that come out of my eyes, and I can like piss, like I know that I can manipulate people and be an asshole without yelling at someone.
Yeah.
Just by doing little tiny things. And I mean, I became a master of that, and my main move was self-destruction.
Oh yeah.
but never fighting, but same energy.
It's same. The same. It's just, what'd you call it? Addict's energy?
The addict energy field.
Addict energy field. And you said, you languaged that and you said, you can, it is what it is, but you can either have it be destructive or you can have it kind of rechanneled into a positive force.
I say society says that there's a good and a bad, but I say it's all bad and it's not the way to live in extremes.
Man, you need to live in balance. Yeah. I agree with that so much. There's a, you know, and forgive me if I just interject because I know a lot of your background and belief system has to do with, you know, kind of spirituality. And and so one of the scriptures that comes to mind as we're talking about this is there's two of them. One is Genesis 50:20. And Genesis 50:20, that night you were at my testimony, I shared this at the very end, is the story of Joseph who was betrayed by his brothers. And there's a famine, and Joseph has been elevated to Pharaoh's right hand, and he like literally controls the grain houses, and clearly has an axe to grind against his brothers, and they don't recognize him, and he comes in there, and I mean, man, if you're Joseph and you can kind of empathize with that situation, like, can you imagine what he could have done, or maybe even the world would say what he should have done.
They left him for dead, right? Now all of his brothers thought he was dead, but one of them kind of like saved him or something. Is that what happened? Or I can't remember.
Well, no, they just left him for dead.
They left him for dead.
And kind of like, and then what happened is he was plucked by like, it would be a bunch of slavers. And then he was kind of sold into slavery, but then
they're like, bye. And yeah. And then they said that he ran away or something.
Yeah, they lied to his father, Jacob, and then they kind of like edged him out because he was the golden boy.
That's one of the greatest stories. I just read the Bible for the first time, like front to back. Well, almost to the back. I got to finish it still. But that's one of my favorite stories is the Joseph story. It's so, but anyway, go ahead.
Well, it's so powerful because a lot of times that's what life does to you, right? It's just this unfair, unthinkable trauma where you just got to be on the other side of it going like, this is not fair. I'm clean. I had this loving father. I had these brothers and I was just doing the best I could. The next thing I know, I'm cleaning toilets in Pharaoh's household. And, but then yet God and his grace and his mercy and his loving kindness and his steadfastness elevates him to Pharaoh's right hand. And then, there's a famine in the land. And I think God is using this as a way to model of like how we should forgive and that it's not our sense of justice. It's his sovereign justice that's ultimately going to come to bear and kind of reconcile all things and all this wrong in the world that does need to be reconciled, but it's not our job. And so Joseph, instead of saying like, hey man, sorry, storehouses are all been allocated, like no food for you. He just kind of, he forgives his brothers and he, you know, he saves them from famine. So Genesis 50:20 says, for what the enemy, Satan, intended for harm, the Lord has turned for good for the saving of many lives. And I think that's applicable to somewhat what you were saying with that addict energy field is like, hey man, bad stuff's going to happen to you at this world. We're promised that. These are Jesus' words that were promised. Like, you're going to have troubles in this world, but take heart because I've overcome the world. So if you can let go of those things and trust, then you're able to walk in freedom and forgiveness, not carry those things that we just weren't meant to carry. And the other one I was going to share is Romans 12:1-2. I really love because number one, Romans 12:1 is like the response of how we're called to live, but Romans 12:2 says, be not conformed to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And so what the world, the patterns the world would have us conform to is like, hey man, yeah, you go be bored, you know, you go be a badass business guy and you do all these things for you and fill your storehouses with for your own pleasures and your own purposes and smoke a bunch of cigarettes and play in your band or whatever. And for Matt Lopez, it's like, go build your business and go buy, I've never had a Ferrari, go buy a Ferrari, go buy a nice house. Like whatever the world would have you do, that's the trap that we're being led to. And so it takes courage and it takes a lot of discipline and excellence for the Lord to be able to opt out of that, what the world would have for us.
Have you ever read the Tao Te Ching?
No.
You've got to. It's this text that was written, I think like 400 years BC. And it's just also about the nature of the world, that there's the it's equal parts dark and equal parts light. God made that. Mm. And you can't have beauty without the opposite. You wouldn't know what it was. You wouldn't know how you feel right now if you hadn't been through all that. And it's almost like, I have no regrets. Like, I'm glad I did all that. If I could go back, I would do it all over again, because it provided me with wisdom today that I never would have had. And I think, like, my self-destructive behavior was pretty fun at most times.
I know.
I had a lot of fun.
And you got to be careful too, because to not glorify it, right? Because it's part of your story, yeah. Just like the fighting was part of mine, but that's what's dangerous about it.
Yeah. You can look back and view everything that occurs as a blessing and a gift. And that's what I do. And even the worst things and even the best things. And I'm not going to look back on it in shame. And that's critical. And I found, and I did forever, I wouldn't speak about all of this on a podcast, especially that to all these people that listen that I work with and everything, unless I had realized, which I have, that truth cuts through shame. That's Amen. The only solution.
Yeah.
It's easy. And then I talk about it, and then there is no more shame.
Well, and
then I'm not dealing with the anxiety.
When the truth cuts through that shame, what's beauty about letting the truth kind of set you free,
yeah,
is that that shame and guilt that's not of God, by the way, it's used as a trap to keep you in bondage.
Right.
Until you deal with it, until you bring it into the light, when you're talking about light and darkness, if you bring something into the light, it's in the light, and the light, like when you turn on the light in the room, it overcomes the darkness. Yeah. The Bible tells us the light has overcome the darkness. Bring everything into the light. And the truth, the Son, shall set you free. Who the Son set you free is free indeed.
Yeah. And I look at it like what I used to do is bounce really hard, like the party really hard, and then do an Ironman. Like that's mm-hmm. kind of like the dark to the light extremes. And then now I just view it like the spiritual yoga is do less dark and less light. I'm not going to not do dark. Mm-hmm. That's insane to think. I'm not going to be that hard on myself. And because that's going to do is create shame, but I'm going to try to be wiser and make better decisions constantly and evolve, like renew my mind and like, okay, I now know that I sense like dating this woman is not going to be in my best interest. And it might've taken me 2 months, 2 years ago. And now it can take me 2 dates and be like, okay, and cut out a lot of that and learn a lesson. That's
yeah.
Just
and
like,
be respectful to her at the same time, right? It's 100%. It becomes not about just you, because you're not a selfish right. person anymore. And that's a right way to love people.
Yeah. And, you know what happens on the third date in this world? It's like the third date, when you have sex. And it's so after now I have the 2 date rule. It's like, make up your mind. Like, do you want to go there? No, I don't want to go there unless I see like some longevity in that relationship. I've learned my lesson, because if you do go there and you know in the back of your mind that it's not going anywhere and you're just going to go like get in that type of sexual relationship with someone that you don't really see long-term, that's just a recipe for unneeded stress and anxiety and drama and hurt for other people and all
of it. Absolutely. Yeah. And if it's like the only amendment that I have there is the long term that you would see it, I would just submit to you and to everyone and to myself, by the way. This is not something that I'm air quotes again preaching but not living out, is that is designed to where you can love sacrificially and then honor that in a marriage. And I'm just going
right.
to say that. I know that's a crazy thing to say in today's world, where it's like, I remember the first time a group of Christians, they were asking me to go to church with them. And I was like, they were explaining this concept to me of like, we're not going to kind of affirm if you're going to still try to have sexual relationships with women outside of marriage. And I literally, unfortunately, told them, that's crazy, because I remembered how crazy it sounds. I was like, I'm not going to do whatever you're doing, because that's wild. No one does that. Yeah. But there is someone that does that, a wild God that loves us in such a crazy way that I think because of some of the things that you're describing, it's like those consequences for doing something that's good inherently, sex is good inherently, But outside of God's design, it has some bad consequences. And certainly just for the way we're wired, men and women, it's like once a woman kind of gives herself to you in that way, there's something that happens. And I think it's something that maybe we won't understand until we're in heaven one day or until God is revealed. But it creates a bond that's not intended to be there until you're married.
Yeah. I think so many of the Ten Commandments, basically, because I've broken almost a lot, not all of them, but a lot of them. And you can say that you go to hell if you break them. And for me, that might be true. Who knows? But what I do know is that you go to hell on earth immediately when you break them.
There's consequences of that sin.
And if you're going to, and you can lie to yourself and say that you're not, but I've never been like not living up to those things and not felt like, in a very bad place. And then that's in the now, in the present moment. And that's all that I know is, yeah, don't live the right way and pay the price. Mm. And maybe keep doing it. And then sometimes God will come down and create the famines or the metaphors for that. And, you know how that goes. It's just like one bad thing after another, after another. I'm really starting to see patterns of that. Like, okay, I'm paying attention. I hear you. Like, I'm paying attention. Thanks. And pay attention to that stuff, because when you're not living in alignment with God, that will happen. But I want to go back to Matthew Lopez.
All right, all right, all right.
So you got out of high school and you went to college.
Yeah.
Where did you go?
I went to TCU.
Did you play soccer?
I played soccer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scholarship?
They did not have scholarships at the time. So I was
Brown didn't either.
Yeah. I mean, kind of same thing with the, so interestingly, like TCU doesn't have a men's soccer program anymore.
Really?
So they were at the time that when I went there, they were one of two schools in Texas that had a Division I men's soccer program, which is kind of crazy still, but it's because of Title IX funding, right? And Texas is such a big football state. And so there's so much money that goes to men's football that they don't have room for a lot of other sports.
American football.
Yeah. So what's funny about it is like we were on the chopping block along with the men's track team of mm-hmm. like, hey, one of you's got to go. And that particular year that one of us had to go was I think it was 2003, my senior year, which by the way, I'd already stopped playing by then. But the men's track team was like number two in the nation.
Yeah.
And so they kind of looked at the soccer team and
sorry guys.
Like, yeah, y'all are no longer existent.
How many years did you play?
Well, I played my whole life growing up, and I only played my freshman year at TCU, and I tore my ACL that summer after our freshman year. But what I always say is I lettered, I was, you know, starting at the end of the season. So I like had a real experience as a college athlete, but, I don't think I've ever shared this, and I don't know the whole world's going to listen, but this is how crazy and destructive my life was. So it was performing at whatever level that is, good enough to, you know, be starting on a Division I soccer program. I tore my ACL in the summer, but I did it in a way that was like super defiant. We had, we were playing in what's called Dallas State Cup. They have an under 19 super group, so you could still play in your after your freshman year. So like a lot of teams would put together like these super teams, and then they would just find out who was the best super team. So I was on one of those. We were playing in the final, and we had dinner the night before with a lot of the guys that I'm still friends with. And I just remember at that dinner that I was basically telling them that there is no God, right? Mm. And they were like, well, if you really believe that, say it. And I'm like, I just said it. Ooh. And I mean, like, it's still to this day is something I have to deal with, because I was like shaking my finger at God. And then literally there were a lot of crazy things that happened that night. One of which
is that so, Mr. Matthew Lopez? Smack.
But it's going to sound like I'm making this up. But
no, it's not. I already know what you're going to tell me.
You do that part. But this is the other crazy part is like, we were staying at a hotel,
yeah,
so we could get good sleep. And we went back to the dinner that night. My roommate's name is Justin. I'll spare the last name, but he's, you know, still one of my best friends. And we went back to our hotel, and that there was a guy there that he had broken into our room. And so when we came into our room, there was like this random guy standing in there and he was acting like he was fixing the shower. And we were kind of both just like taken aback. And then he was like, "Hey guys, I think I got it all fixed up now." But he was just wearing normal clothes, didn't look like a maintenance guy. And then he just walked by us and walked out of our door. And I looked at Justin and in like 2 seconds, I realized something was wrong. So I'm like trying to chase this guy down. He's literally sprinting around the hotel. Cops are called. He's like a referee at the soccer fields. He had left like pink underwear in my bag and like all this just weird craziness, right?
Very weird.
Next morning after I'd done that defiance of God, I tore my ACL. Just like the very end of the game, it didn't really matter. Yeah. I was just kind of running hard after a ball, no contact, blew out my knee. And honestly, like I would have, you know, people come back from ACL injuries and I've now had 5, but this is I'm just illustrating the defiance and stubbornness in my life. So 3 weeks after my surgery, I've had it repaired and I'm throwing a huge party at my house in college. And there was a guy that came by and I don't remember all the details, but he basically came by to fight me and I didn't know him. And there was no history there. And I could have easily just been like, I just had surgery. I mean, it's lunacy to fight somebody when you're 3 weeks off surgery. I was literally on crutches.
Lunacy.
And so he showed up and it was like 11 o'clock at night. And I
drinking.
Was I?
Yeah.
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 And I took one of my buddies with me that is a big guy, and there were like 14 of them. And we drove into a park and I put my crutches in the truck and I fought.
You're making
him.
My leg hurt, yeah. Telling this story.
Yeah. And I destroyed my knee again. And so then that was the end of my soccer career, not because there was a lot of reasons. I probably still could have come back, but it was just like the guilt and shame. And I just felt like the biggest idiot in the world. And honestly, like God was just calling me out of that. Like, I don't know what I would have done with my life differently, but God had a plan and the plan was to humble me and to kind of remove that idol or God in my life as a soccer player. And yeah, so I never really shared that with anybody, but like you said, it's just like you bring truth to all this guilt and shame, and there's a little bit of freedom in that. Maybe someone will find freedom in that story of like something foolish that they did. But like where I sit now, like I have this beautiful wife named Laurie that I love to death, little girl named Layla. And so I don't have a lot of regret over my past because I believe what you were saying, like you can just look at it as like this is either bad or good. Romans 8:28 reminds us that God's working all things together for the good for those that love him. And so I just apply that to my life. I think everyone should. And it makes things like that not so difficult to swallow or shuck off.
Yeah. I was trying to find a quote and I can't find it, but I heard one the other day. And it's basically like God gives all humans one thing, the ability to change their mind.
Oh yeah.
And you've done that. So
that's free
good
will,
job.
Man.
Free yeah, will, baby. Like yeah. You can just do it on a dime. Okay. I'm going to stop drinking.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop fighting.
Yeah.
I'm going to believe in God. I'm no longer going to renounce God. Like that's all you got to do. It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. And, gosh, but I know you can get in those places. All humans can, where you're just like, can't see it. You can't see it that it's that simple.
Yeah.
Like, well, no, I can't stop drinking because I like to drink wine with my steak. Like, what would people think at a happy hour if I quit drinking? What if I go on a date and I'm not drinking? What would they think? Like, this is me, you know, like I have every voice in my head making it not simple, but it's simple. Just don't do it.
Yeah. It's really simple.
Wow.
And it's just, what's hard about it is like dismissing that chorus of voices that is the pattern of the world. Because the world would be like, oh, everyone's going to think you're a weirdo, Ward. No, dude, when I saw you, you know, laying it down like that, I'm like, that's my guy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I knew you would find freedom there. And I'm so, so proud of you. And I know you're...
Right back at you.
I know, man.
So then you went to law school.
Did, yeah. I went to law school.
Where?
Mm-hmm. I did SMU law school.
Okay.
And then... I was through 2 years of law school, and because of how rankings work and like everything, basically the Cox School of Business came and talked to us at the law school and said like, hey, if you want to come take the GMAT, you know, we can give you a scholarship to do the MBA program. And that was really appealing to me because I wanted to always apply my legal mind on the business side, which I've now done.
Yeah.
But yeah, like God in his kindness gave me that opportunity. So I did the JD MBA program at SMU. Actually, no, that's I did end up with a JD degree and an MBA degree, but I pursued them both separately and got the full degrees, whatever that means.
Cool.
And then went on to practice law and got an opportunity at a great firm to be in their real estate, their transactional real estate practice.
What year was that?
2007.
Yeah. So when I met you, that was, you were like 4 years in as a lawyer.
Yep.
And then we did the Ironman, and then you and Myers started your own company.
Yeah.
Kind of shortly thereafter, I think.
It was right then. In fact, the labor, because that Ironman was around Labor Day. And so it was like at the end of August and early September is when we did our trip. And remember, I don't remember if you did the same thing, but we kind of did a extended vacay in Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was really nice. So I had actually committed to go work at another law firm before we left to do the Ironman. And then just so many kind people that I had worked with while I was on the Ironman reached out to me and they're like, hey, man, I know you're leaving us, meaning leaving our law firm, but don't go work at another law firm. Like everybody knows that you want to be an entrepreneur. Like go do your thing now where, you know, you don't have a family and like worst case scenario, you can eat ramen and stay on our couch. But like go try that thing that we all know is in you. And man, that was just, that was a godsend for me.
That encouragement from just one person can really change your life, right?
The whole trajectory. And I'm still friends with the main gal. She's a partner or was a partner over there, now started her own firm too. But she's been a dear friend. You just have those people in your life where you're just like, they're almost like, you know, an angel, like a messenger that's just like, hey, this is not what you're supposed to do. Here's a guidepost, like reorient yourself. And so, yeah, me and Myers. So I came back and then I had to deliver the news to the law firm that I committed to start with. Like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go do my own thing. And then John and I started deciding what we would do together. And that ended up being a real estate service company, which is a title company. And we focused on the commercial side of things. And it took a while to stabilize and a lot of growing pains there, a lot of lessons in friendship and leadership and just really a beautiful time. That is one of the things that I'm just so thankful for, is getting to do that with one of my best friends.
And you guys played soccer together.
Yeah. In fact, the way that we kind of decided that we would do business together is, after I had torn up my knee and everything, they would have these people then that would come onto you on campus and they'd be like, hey, go to spring break in Acapulco. And if you sell this many seats on our package, then you get to go on your trip for free. So I kind of got one of those flyers. And I looked at John. I was like, hey, you want to do this with me, man? And he was like, yeah. So we ended up selling like 2 airplanes full of trips.
Yeah.
So we got like, I think we got to go on a free trip to Acapulco like for the rest of our lives or whatever. And then that's where we're like, hey, man, maybe we're a good team. And we kind of just stuck with that theme and ended up being a good team.
Doing an Ironman together, yeah, starting a business together. How many years now is the business?
So we started in 2011.
Yeah.
And which is when we did the Ironman. And then where are we now? 2023.
Wow.
But I have a slight life update for you.
I heard.
Okay.
I think now's the time. We're there, right?
Are we?
Yeah. Unless you want to touch on anything else about your
title business.
I'm
happy to revisit, but like, yeah, let's just rip the band-aid out there.
Tell me. Yeah. And I heard this news about you. And right when I heard it, I was like, oh, I got to get him on the podcast.
For sure, man. Thank you.
I haven't heard it directly from you yet. So tell me.
I haven't shared this publicly. I've only shared this like at, you know, like the breakfast meeting that we were going to have this morning in lieu of this podcast is when I would have told you. So I've had several of those conversations, but never to a group, and we haven't put out anything in the market. But basically, I'm trying to like be respectful and kind of mindful of everything. But
It's coming out. Truth. This is coming out in like a month and a half too, by the way. So
and it's great. And then, you know, by that time, people are going to know a lot of what I'm focusing on now, which is all a great thing. But here's the deal. So what I was thinking through is, you know, John Myers, for his sake, like thinking about what's best to share for him and edifying for him and exhorting for him. And so John and I are best friends. We've been through so much stuff. Like I would literally die for the guy, right? Which is not saying much because a lot of us would die for our friends, but that's just how I feel for him, about him and like some of the bonds that we've formed because of some of the things you've done. Like when you build a business with somebody and are accountable for other people's livelihoods and kind of have that pressure on you, it's like, man, you're gonna see the weight is going to be on the bridge and you're going to see the cracks on the bridge, right? And so we've had to repair a lot of cracks and we spent a lot of time together. And I just think we're better friends for it, better people for it, hopefully better husbands and fathers and men in our community. And
13 years of running a business is no joke.
It's awesome. But it's a weighty endeavor.
Yes.
And so, along the way, there were a lot of times I've shared my story now about like, y'all know that one of the biggest things in my life is having to deal with anger. And so there were just a lot of times where in those stressful environments that I would, my ugly, you know, angry head would pop up and John would bear the brunt of that, right? And so for however all these years, and he's, you know, extended a lot of grace and forgiveness for me over time, but it did happen again, you know, rather recently. And that time was just, it's not even worth really telling the story. It's just like heated exchange and it wasn't physically violent or even risky. It was just something that you wouldn't be proud of like in a boardroom, right? And I think maybe even on both of our parts, I certainly, you know, ended up asking for John's forgiveness. But what that did is it, and this goes back to that Genesis 50:20 verse that I shared earlier about like, hey, this could have been really bad. God is going to turn it around for good. But John spent a lot of time that next week and weekend and praying, to his credit. And he asked me to go to a meeting with him that next week after we had had this like really tense conversation that hurt him. And he said, man, and he was tearful when he was saying this. And he was like, I can barely get these words out because I feel like God is forcing me to say this, but I feel like, you know, now's the time that we kind of need to just part ways, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, because I don't want this tension and anger in our friendship. Like, I just want a brotherhood and I want peace. And this is the first time in my life and in the, you know, life cycle of our business where I would even have the confidence to say something like this because I would say the same thing of him. Like I wouldn't have rent this business by myself. There's no way. And so I think what he was trying to articulate there is like our business is stabilized. We have a great team. Me, meaning Matthew, is a builder, like more of a visionary. And so my contribution to our organization really occurred in that, you know, first 4 to 6 years.
Building it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then John is more of an operator and he can optimize the machine and squeeze all the juice out of it. And he kind of thrives on that. So this is like his season where it's time for John Myers to shine. And it seems like, and is now, I know, a time where Matthew may be wanting to do something else. And like from the moment he said it, number one, I told my wife on my way to the meeting that that's what John was going to propose.
You knew he was going to say it,
And that's just something that I think God did to prepare my heart to respond favorably instead of like, you jerk, how dare you, you know, right. Whatever. And so from that conversation, I did respond favorably and I was like, that's exactly what God's putting on my heart too, dude. And this is in the context of me asking forgiveness for you know, like, you know, losing my temper essentially. And so 6 weeks later, we had what we ended up doing is I, you know, still have a minority stake in our business, right? And that's hopefully going to be God's provision for what my, you know, next thing is. And so I always, when I'm saying that, like I always have an interest in an MBL title, affinity toward it,
you're MBL, baby.
Right. It ends up being kind of funny of like, I'm always going to be a fan of that organization. Of course, all my friends there, including John.
Matthew Brent Lopez?
Yeah. And there's a story there too. There's a story there too. That's not just all an ego play. But anyway, and you know, we had, I think, new investors to buy my majority interest out and the majority of my interest out, and kind of, you know, left with that interest that I wanted to keep and be aligned and like willing to help with my relationships. But I renounced day-to-day operations.
Yeah.
And that was really to free John up to, like, you know, be that operator that's just, you know, able to optimize the machine there. And then also to free me up for what God had put on John's heart, but what God had also put on my heart, which was when John said that to me, he said, I want to free you up because it's very clear to me and everyone else that God has a calling on your life to go in more into what I will call vocational ministry. And so the reason why I say vocational ministry is because I think we're all in ministry right now. Like, if you're walking with the Lord, like, where you don't have to leave the listeners, but I'm like pointing at Ward right now. Like, you don't have to leave where you are to go do ministry. Like, you be that person in your workplace. Like, if you're a barista at a coffee shop, or like where I was at Cafe Brazil this morning with a guy named Mark, I mean, he's literally just witnessing the customers that come in. He's just sharing his life story and like how he, you know, found freedom and truth. And that's the guy or gal that you want to be wherever you are, doing wherever you are at all times. And so when I say more vocational ministry, it's more called into like church leadership, a men's outreach ministry, and start studying the Word of God, right? And so since I can say, like, before my God now, that allowed me to be back at his table, you know, because that's who our God is. That's the character of our God after I rejected him. And he's going to use my life and my story and whatever giftings he's given me to, you know, be the source of hope and truth for those that are in need or going through their dark night of their soul. And that's for the, you know, the unbelievers. Like, I'm just tired of hearing people tell me that one of their loved ones committed suicide, or some, you know, a lot of people that I know in my first circle or second, you know, once removed circle, it's just like, there's too many people that are taking that trap from the enemy as the way out from their pain. And I just want to, I just want someone to be, this is the heart of my vocational ministry. Like, I want you, if you're at coffee with someone and you're like, that person is telling Ward, hey man, my cousin just lost his job. He just found out he has cancer. I'm worried about him because they, you know, just had a miscarriage. It's just like, this life is just coming after this guy, and the enemy is going to want that guy to take the way, the easy way out.
Oh yeah,
the and I want forces. You to be able to say, hey, go have coffee with my buddy Matt Lopez. Like, he's been through some of this stuff, which I have. That's part of my story, and meaning the suicidal thoughts, and I want to listen to that person, and I want to love that person by spending time with them. And then I'm going to speak some truth and life over them to the extent they're willing to listen. But then I'm going to be this anchor point to tie them to a mast that just says, like, hey, and this is true of 2024, what I'm about to say. I have four events coming up where I have a group of guys that are getting together and to remind each other how we're supposed to love one another, but where our source of truth and hope and freedom should be, even in the midst of like a very dark time in your life. Like, which event do you want to go to? And then my point there is, like, that's a hopefully a really easy response over a cup of coffee. It's like, well, man, I'll come spend some time with y'all at Reeder Ranch and on Martin Luther King weekend. Are y'all going in a couple weeks? Well, yeah, we are. And there'll be 60 guys there that are going through a similar thing or have come out of a similar thing. And we're going to remind each other how to be encouraged and to put our hope in Jesus and our eternal hope instead of just our life circumstances that don't look so bright right now.
Yeah.
And so God has just been amazing at how he's orchestrating that, how he's resourced us, right? Because, like, a lot of the vision that I want to do and be able to provide a place for people to go or someone to talk to, like, those things cost money. And so, you know, the initiative that I'm involved in is a friend of mine named Todd Wagner. He's been working on things like this, but it's just called 1613 Project. And, you know, I can share more about that, but 1613project.com has all the information. You can subscribe to our newsletter. We're still in startup mode, right? Because that's why I said 2024, but we are going to do these four events in 2024.
It's happening.
It's happening. But if you want more information, you know, sign up with our, you know, email, with your email address on that website. If you want to support us, which a lot of people are, and I'm like, amazing level of financial support already with just saying what I'm about to say for 2 weeks is like, we believe that the Lord's provision will follow his will. So like if I'm doing what God has me to do, then I believe he's going to provide the resources
for sure.
And so 1613project.com/give. Yeah. And even if you give $20, it's going to bless someone that where I'm going to be able to go have a cup of coffee with them, or I'm going to be able to provide the food at these men's weekends. Initially, we're going to build up a team of women leaders that are going to do the same type of ministry and playbook for women that are in need.
That's awesome.
We're going to do a couples ministry. We're going to do a pastor's conference and an elders and church leadership conference. We're going to start. And the idea is not to call someone into something new, right?
Yeah.
What we want to do is just remind them of what we're supposed to do, where we've found the source of our hope and our faith, but then go send them back into their communities. In other words, Ward can use this 3-day men's conference to come be encouraged, like almost like a military muster, and then go back and do Ward Richmond's things. We believe Ward Richmond is exactly where God has them, you know, doing the Trucking On podcast and the platform you have and the story that you have and the people that you can reach that I can't, and in your kindness, you've allowed me to be on your podcast and share your story. But to me, that's just the love of God and how he moves and reminds the world of who he is. And when we talk about darkness and not being able to appreciate the love of God without that darkness, like you can't appreciate like how big something is until you've experienced small, right? It's those just kind of extremes and tension that only God can resolve. And that have to be there for there to be a free will and for there to be true love. Without the choice that you were talking about earlier, then we can't have love. If we're forced to love and we don't have to make that choice, then we're just really robots.
Right.
And there's no love there. And you would never feel love. But I think God has set eternity in every man's heart. And that's why we're always searching to fill it with something, is because those are non-eternal things. So the alcohol, the drugs, the music, the triathlon, the jujitsu, the like all these things that you and I both kind of just try to fill that hole in our heart with, nothing really works.
Do you still do jujitsu?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But what's cool about that is like,
I just in balance. I think everything's good in balance, man.
But I mean, more in balance is I just try to bring God into everything I do. So one of my friends is running a podcast called Jesus and Jujitsu. Spent a lot of time with him. And so there's a lot of believers that are in jujitsu, and I'm just trying to support everyone that's serving the king that I serve.
You a black belt?
No, but I'm working on it, man.
When did you start that journey?
I think I started in 2016.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm a purple belt, hopefully get my brown belt later in 2024, and then I'll start the march to black belt.
So. My son's doing jujitsu.
Yes, dude.
And I did it a couple years ago, but I actually wasn't as lean and mean as I am now. And I love the Professor Santos, Marco Santos.
Oh, yeah.
You know
him?
Oh,
yeah.
I got to get him on here.
Yes.
He's one of my favorite humans. And I did a lot of one-on-one work with him.
Because he's at Soul Fighters, is that right?
He's at Lake Highlands. Machado Brothers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I've actually trained with Marcus too then. I've just had my wires crossed for a second. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just fantastic. And, but I've been thinking about getting back into it actually. What a great sport. So what advice would you give to your younger self after all of this journey? If you could go back to 11-year-old Matthew.
I would say, submit yourself to God.
Yeah.
Big thing for me was rebellion and not trusting any authority, but including God's authority.
I felt like I believed in God when I was growing up. But I had there's major separation, obviously, looking back now. I don't know, like that makes sense to me today. And I say it on the podcast all the time, have faith in God. It's hard sometimes for that to make sense. Just like this, these making these decisions to change your life instantaneously seem very difficult, even though it's really simple. God, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like if you told 11-year-old me, have faith in God. Well, yeah, I'm going to church. I'm like, yes, I believe in God, but it's so there's like this difference, you know, I had to go be put through it to like know what that means.
Yeah.
Unfortunately or fortunately, I don't know. It's just such is my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think we just know it. Like you, when I was talking about my story of the trauma I endured, what the world would tell you is like, yeah, you should want to go get justice for that guy that did that to you when you're a little boy. That's, you know, that's awful. But man, that's a trap. And that's not what God calls us to do. So that was an unwillingness to submit my life to the word of God.
Just forgive, basically.
Dude, like, forgiveness is such a, people get so hung up on it and it is difficult. So I'm not dismissing the difficulty. But the real head fake is the forgiveness, it frees the forgiver. Like you're in bondage if you hold on to that hate and anger, or like the sense of that you're going to render your own sense of justice or vengeance and you have a vindictive heart or a murderous heart. Like it's just not the way that God designed us. You said something earlier that I want to circle back to about the Ten Commandments and like, hey, I've probably broken every one of those and that probably means I'm going to hell. And the crazy part about that is when I'm responding to that, I'm like, yeah, the answer is yes. And Jesus says, but the Ten Commandments are called the law. And so the Pharisees were adherent to the law in right. Jesus' time. They're kind of like the legalists or whatever. And Jesus tells everyone, he says, I came not to abandon the law, but to fulfill the law. So those Ten Commandments, Jesus illustrates throughout his life. And there's a story of the rich young ruler where Jesus like cuts through the matters of the heart. And that rich young ruler says, Lord, I've kept all those commandments, those Ten Commandments. Jesus goes on later to say, but thou shalt not commit adultery. But if you've looked at a woman with lust in your eyes, you've committed adultery in your heart. If you have hate for your brother, you've committed murder in your heart. So we're all guilty of the law. And then the punishment for that, God's sense of justice, because he can know no sin, is like, well, you're gonna go to hell to that unless you accept my provision of Jesus, which is the fulfillment of the law. The law was just intended to show us we can't even uphold these 10 relatively simple commandments because of the depravity of the human heart.
Yeah.
But if all you have to do is profess with your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord and Savior, died for your sins so you wouldn't be eternally separated from your loving Father in heaven, and then there's your freedom. Boom.
Yeah.
And it's not that complicated.
Yeah. I would say, to sum that up, if I were talking to my 11-year-old self who would not understand, give yourself to God, I wouldn't have gotten yeah. it. I would say, have faith in God, tell the truth, and forgive.
Amen.
And those three things. And all of that, I think, because when you're breaking the Ten Commandments, if you tell the truth about it, you're going to break them less because you don't want to keep telling the truth over and over about doing it. And I think like bringing that truth to light makes it easier to not repeat the mistakes I found. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of that in the church. I'm not a big church goer. I'm a big God believer, but I don't think that asking for forgiveness for sins is the answer to repairing your heart, telling the truth about your sins and owning up to them and admitting them and freely, not just to like a priest or to God in silent prayer, but own that shit and walk the walk and don't go continually make bad decisions and have a little conversation with God and say, Jesus, sorry,
yeah.
God, forgive me. But then you keep doing it. You won't keep doing it if you tell the truth to everybody. That's, I guarantee you that.
Yes.
It's like Clint was telling me on our last podcast I did, Clint Riley, how he has his text messages tied to his kid's iPad. It's like,
oh, right.
Boom.
Yeah.
That's great. Like Clint doesn't have to worry about like getting like getting into bad situations because his kids have his text message chain, you know? Yeah. And he was saying that. It's like, yeah, dude, that's just like the truth, man. It'll set you free. So anyway,
that's
my take on that. But I agree wholeheartedly. Like basically like, go walk the righteous path, little ward. Like that's it.
Amen.
Try your best to at least and forgive yourself for the times that you don't.
Yeah.
Forgiving yourself is equally as important as forgiving others. Harder for me, I think, like at times. So
yeah, and sometimes it's hard to just accept, you know, God's grace in your life. The concept of God's grace is really hard for like to fully comprehend and appreciate. But there's just nothing that we can do to separate us from the love of our Father. No sin, no awful thing that you don't want to tell anyone. If in a James 5:16 way you confess your sins to one another, what you were talking about, mm-hmm. which is like just bring it to light, bring truth and repent. Like what I believe, the miracle is the life transformation that I see. I don't believe that I hope and I believe that you will be sanctified over time, but I don't believe Ward Richmond is walking with the Lord and all of a sudden is going to be perfect.
Never.
Where I expect to see the miracle of the life change is when Ward Richmond screws up. That he has a repentant heart.
Yes.
Where you're like, man, I'm messed up. And I'm not just saying this so I can be absolved of my sins and then run off and do it all again. It's because I know this breaks my heart and hurts me, but I know it hurts my Father's heart in heaven. And so confessing that to one another and asking forgiveness is just gonna sanctify me. It's gonna make me a better man that doesn't want to make that same confession to my wife or my son or my daughter again. And that's part of God's plan to make you perfect as he calls you home for glory. It won't be that way until we're in heaven, but it should be a constant trend of a sanctifying path. But part of that plan is just admitting when you screwed up. And man, so one of the biggest opportunities that I have is like for giving advice to my younger self is not to let anything hide in darkness because all that taught me to do was live a double life.
For sure.
And so now when I screw up, like I did the other day when I was really unkind to a sweet young banker that was just trying to help me get a construction loan done. Became an emotional thing for me, involved my house and my family, and I just barked at her over an email in front of like three other people on the recipient list. And instead of just like what I could have done is just like leaving that be, whatever, I don't know her, I'm not going to see her again, you know, and I was right. In this like self-righteous way is like I sent a follow-up email, just fell on the sword and just like, will you forgive me? That's not who I am. But I'll remember that forever. I don't know if she will or not. That's not the point. The next time I'm going to send up, fire off a haughty, you know, email, I'm going to pause because I know that my God's going to hold me accountable and be like, well, you're not even going to ask for forgiveness for that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that again. So I may not send that email.
You still might. And then you're at least like catching yourself, you know, like, I'm never going to be perfect, but as long as I can kind of catch myself and backtrack and take ownership of it. I think forgiveness is also like synonymous with shame and blame. Like don't shame others. Don't blame others. Don't shame yourself. Don't blame yourself. Like, you know, just, I mean, you can like take ownership, just I see it a lot in the world of my alcoholic friends. Yeah. Like it's their fault I drank. Oh, it's their fault. My life's falling apart.
Blah, the devil blah, blah, blah. Made me do it.
Yeah. It's like, no, it's you create your own reality.
Yep.
So take ownership of it. And, one of my friends is a great leader and gives great speeches and we're talking about it, this, and I was hearing some blaming come out of him. I was like, when you give your speeches on leadership, do you tell people that they should blame others for shitty things that happen to them in your speech? Have you ever said that? Like, of course not.
But
so
yeah, he's saying
why are you doing that?
Himself.
Yeah, you're doing it right now.
Yeah.
FYI. So would you, speaker on stage who inspires all kinds of people, would you add that to your speech, what your behavior right now? Of course you wouldn't. So.
And that concept, man, is so, you're saying so many wise things that I almost can't help, but just like, I wish this conversation was like a more Rogan-esque 3-hour long form, but I know you got to leave to get your son and be a good dad.
I'm all about repeat episodes.
Yeah, I would love that, man. And so maybe that's a really good place to leave it.
It's lunch with a loved one today at school.
Let's honor that.
I have a little bit of time.
Okay.
And I'm going to go through the quick hits.
Okay, okay.
What's your favorite vacation destination?
Punta Mita, Mexico.
Heck yeah. The St. Regis?
My wife and I got married at the Four Seasons down there.
Yeah.
And we've just, those people have been so like a godsend to us.
I love it.
We just took my little girl back there. So that's my favorite place, man.
I love it. That's where I'm doing a vacation with each of my kids this year, just father, son, father, daughter. Mm. And my son wants to go to Punta Mita.
Dude, yeah. And surfing. Great surfing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What's your favorite restaurant?
In Dallas.
Wherever. What comes to mind?
Yeah. So, and there's a little bit of an explanation here, but my short answer is Royal China.
Oh, yeah.
Dallas establishment.
Solid.
My friend George runs that restaurant.
Those dumplings there. Yeah. So good.
Man, everything is so good. There's a guy there that's from China, and his name's Joe. He is always so nice, and he's a local there. He's always at the bar, but he elbowed me one time and he was like, bro, do you understand what you're eating here? And I'm like, yeah, it's really good food. And he goes, no, this is literally the food you would get at my grandmother's table in China.
Yeah.
Like, it is that authentic. I'm like, I know, man, there's a reason why there's a line here all the time. All right, what's next?
What book would you recommend? And just give me quick hits because I do got to go.
Okay, Bible. I would say that's, you know, always number one. The Good Book. I love it. Make it your hobby. That's what I've tried to do the last 7 months, and it just kind of stacks on itself and reveals itself.
You can read one verse too that'll take 5 seconds, and that'll change your whole mood for the day, I found.
Yeah, and cool. Start in Proverbs or Psalms, yeah. And just do that, and it'll edify you. And then another one that I really like right now is called Seven Men by Eric Metaxas. And it's a story of seven that I would submit, and he does too, that they're incredible men. And but they did some things that were very costly to them, almost all of them died. So the first chapters he does on George Washington, and that's just a little teaser, but it's a good book.
Yeah. What else? What quote?
I'm going to quote my friend Todd Wagner, if I can get this right. And he says often in like a way that admonishes, but hopefully calls you back. And it says, if, let me see, if you like what you're doing, if you like what you got, keep doing what you're doing. But if you keep doing what you're doing, you're not going to like what you got. Yeah. I mean, it can seem like it's going really well for you at a time, but somewhere along the way, it's not, and you're not going to like it, and you're going to wish that you've changed your ways.
Yeah. Love that. What about a charity? Your new organization.
Yeah. Support us. That would be awesome. 1613project.com/give, 1613project.com. And then another one that I really love is Our Calling in Dallas. They're a faith-based 501c3 that helps our homeless community in Dallas and make sure that they stay alive and get the care. And they're sometimes we're called to meet a need. So they do that, and then they all the while remind people of the gospel.
We'll put it in the show notes.
All right.
And where do our listeners find you?
The easiest way to find me right now, I'm not very active on there right now, but I plan to change that in 2024 to kind of just give like a more robust way to share what I'm working on, is my Instagram handle is essential_business. So like, you know, essential business during the COVID times, but it's essential_business. And that's
I don't think I follow you.
No, I don't think you're on there. A lot of people don't have any idea that it's me because of the handle there. But my wife, who's more active, her handle is much more sophisticated. Bing a ling a ding dong. So you can find her and see
that's
some pictures, and she'll link to some of what I'm doing too. But her maiden name is Bing, so I think it just kind of went with the territory. How I knew I love her, because she doesn't take herself too seriously.
Bing-a-ling-a-ding-dong.
Bing-a-ling-a-ding-dong, essential business. And Ward, I just wanted to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for what you're doing. I know you're helping and blessing a lot of people. I know you found your calling and your passion in life. Proud to know you, proud to be friends with you, and that God gave us such a rich history that we can talk like we didn't miss a beat. So I hope we get to do this again.
Agreed.
All right.
Thank you so much, Matthew. Thanks for trucking on.
Let's go, man. All right. Truck on. All right. I'm
trucking on. Peace. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to this episode of Truckin' On. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, don't be shy. Please like, share, leave a 5-star review so that we can keep doing what we're doing. Stay safe out there on the road. Keep on trucking.
So much shame when I share my little lies. No one left to blame until I stare into these eyes. I'm gonna tell the truth to you till I break on through to the other side. Living like I'm gonna die is the only time I feel alive. Living like I'm gonna die is the only time I feel alive. And I'm trucking on. I'm trucking on. Move on down the line. Another town will do me fine. I'm trucking on. I'm trucking on. And I'm trucking on.